I have to remind you that the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us on the line Robert Bertadini. We're going to be talking about his book on children's health, a fascinating insight into health problems that face not only children but adults here in America. So you're going to learn a lot about health and health issues from Mr. Bertadini. Robert, thank you so very much for being with us this evening.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Why don't you tell our listeners just a little bit about yourself and how you got interested in this problem in writing a book about children's health?
Well, it comes from a lot of different directions, actually, one of which was my own health challenges, which started probably about 20 years ago. But around that time, I was an environmental engineer working for the state of South Carolina, and I got to see a lot of different things in that job. And one of the things that I saw was pharmaceutical companies, and we would inspect them, nuclear power plants, chicken processing plants, all sorts of stuff. And I got a good handle on toxicity and toxicology and what poisons are in our environment can actually do. We used to conduct studies with fish and see what would happen in the streams and different things, and that's what my master's degree was in environmental engineering. So I had a pretty good feel for that, and then when my health challenges came and the doctors couldn't help me, I started looking into alternative methods of healing. So I got into a lot of different things, juicing and vegetarianism, that I recommend vegetarianism, and I address that in my book, but went down a lot of different roads trying to get healthy on my own. And then I was also, I've had some children's books published, and I used to go to schools, and I still do, and I do, you know, readings of my books and shows and different things. And I saw kids and, you know, was sympathetic to their problems. And when the Columbine shootings and that rash of shootings happened a few years ago, it really made me wonder why it was happening. And based on my nutritional background and studies and my toxicology background, I started thinking, you know, these kids aren't becoming violent just because it's a social problem. I thought it had to go deeper than that. It was actually more than a social problem, more than a mental problem. It actually became a physiological problem because of many of the toxicities and the drugs and different things that these children have been exposed to.
Well, I think that's really very true. We know that certainly many of the children who were actually involved in the shootings and the violence were either on Ritalin or Luvox or the other psychotropic drugs, mm-hmm. which they're putting our children on so much, so often, predisposing them to suicide, predisposing them to acts of violence. And the average individual really doesn't know. After all, when the doctor says, "Why, my goodness, you're hyperactive, you've got to go on Ritalin," people don't understand. It's going to stunt their growth. It's going to have a profound impact on their entire physiology, but I don't think even the doctors understand, you know, what this does as far as the brain is concerned and even its future function.
Well, I'd also like to talk about what happens in medical school, because I was in medical school, and when we come back, I guess, I hear the music playing.
All right, you hold that thought. We'll get to that as soon as we get back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan here. Our guest is Robert Bertadini, and we're talking about his book. It's titled "Of the Truth About Children's Health: The Comprehensive Guide to Understanding, Preventing, and Reversing Disease." So, pick up the story there, Robert.
Well, after I was when I was an engineer, my health started failing me, and I started, like I said, I had problems. I went to doctors; they couldn't solve them. And I started taking things into my own hands, and one of the things I did was actually I went back to school for a doctorate degree in anatomy and physiology, which is basically a medical degree, you know, as far as a medical doctor goes, because I was in the same classes, took the same tests, did everything the same in the lab and everything as medical doctors. And it was really an eye-opening experience to see just what happened in medical school, where the emphasis was, how the young doctors were being trained. And it was really pretty shocking because everything was so oriented. After the first year or so of study, which was actually pretty good because you studied a lot of science, biochemistry, physiology, anatomy. But after that, most of the education had to do with drugs. And they never really discussed how the drugs worked necessarily, but it was like, what do you prescribe for this and what do you prescribe for that? And these doctors were so weary almost of their studies because they really work you hard. And it's almost like breaking in a horse. They ride you so hard that eventually you stop bucking and you follow the party line. And that's what I saw happen to a lot of the students there. It was they're well-intentioned and everything, but after such a rigorous training and so much pressure, they basically succumbed to what the pharmaceutical companies were teaching them, which came through in the medical schools. So it was really kind of disheartening to see. The focus was not on any kind of working with nature approach, but it was always to subdue nature in a way with the drugs, which I really didn't subscribe to.
Well, I certainly understand your feelings on that, certainly having practiced medicine for a long period of time and loved every minute of it. And, you know, the doctors are good people. They really want to do the very best they can for you. But, you know, you don't think very much about nutrition. You don't learn much about nutrition. I've learned so much more about nutrition. I've learned so much about the drug studies on many of the drugs that are being used now since I got out. Far more than the average doctor knows, because we have an opportunity to read the meta-analyses and these other.
Basically stays in the body and it builds up more and more, and it has a greater and greater impact as time goes on because it bioaccumulates. And these kids are being inoculated with these vaccines at such a frequency and such a high dose that, you know, they can't handle it. And mercury is a known toxicological poison. It's a known neurological poison, and yet, and the government gives warnings about not eating fish that is contaminated with mercury, and yet they still have it in the vaccines that they subscribe.
Well, of course, they think they've taken it out of childhood vaccines. In this country, of course, we're still giving it to children throughout the world. But, you know, in their wisdom, they said we're taking out of childhood vaccines, but we're going to leave it in the influenza vaccine, and every child at 6 months should get it, knowing full well the toxic effect it's going to have on the brain. There is no safe level of mercury, for a developing child, and yet they insist on giving it. You have to ask yourself, how could you be this stupid unintentionally? And then the mercury you get in your fillings, there were studies recently that said, well, we're sure that there's no problem. We did these studies for, 500 children in Portugal and the United States, and we followed them for 4 or 5 years. And, well, yes, they did have an increased level of mercury in their urine if they got the cavities filled, but actually it wasn't so high in the blood, and it eventually went down. And they don't point out that the fact that they had an increased level in their urine shows that, they had an increased blood level, and that was being stored in the brain. And, what can you tell in a few years? And, of course, in a small group of people, I mean, they didn't even bother to look at the incidence of autism in those kids, because they said there just weren't enough kids, so they didn't bother to check for it.
I think it was something like a little over 500 children were examined over a course of 3 or 4 or 5 years. And actually the incidences of autism are like maybe 1 in 500, even with the increase, even with the vaccinations. So the chances of them having an autistic child surface there are not as great as if they took a larger pool, a larger sample.
Well, of course, what they're really trying to do is convince the American people that mercury fillings are perfectly safe, which they're not, because they continue to vent. And they even admitted they continued to vent other mercury, but they said, well, gee, but, you know, they didn't have any increased blood levels. No, of course, it's all being stored in the brain.
Well, there's a number of points I'd like to make here.
Go ahead.
First of all, I'm not sure that they have successfully taken it out of vaccines in this country. They say they were going to, but I'm pretty sure, and I can't put my finger on the exact report that I read, but that had been kind of retracted, and a lot of people didn't know about it. And mercury, to my understanding, is still in a lot of vaccines and childhood vaccines. Another point, you know, talking about those studies about how, you know, children were followed, they've also done studies on Amish children. And Amish children don't get vaccines at all. And
they don't get autism either.
No, and they don't get autism. In fact, I think there was one incident of autism discovered in an Amish person, and actually that kid had a vaccine, I think.
It had actually been adopted and come from China, but it had the vaccine.
Oh, is that it?
Right.
Okay. And I think that's very telling. The term autism itself, the disease itself, did not become established in the medical literature until shortly after vaccines were available for the general public. Autism originally was considered a rich family's disease. That is, children that came from rich families seemed to get autism more and more. More than the general population, and the reason for that was, or one of the reasons they think for that was, that these children, the parents of the children, could afford vaccines, which were just basically becoming more and more available, but only to people with money. So these children that were of richer families got these vaccines, and autism started showing up. The general population, the poorer children that didn't have it, didn't have the money to get it, weren't getting autism. And then when public assistance things came and, you know, community health programs and all this great advance, supposedly, to help our children, the money was available and vaccines became available to everybody, not just rich people. Then autism spread into the general population. I mean, it's a very telling statistical analysis that shows this.
Well, because the other thing is, of course, that they were giving the children so many vaccines. Initially, you only got one vaccine. That was the diphtheria, tetanus, and pertussis, and then maybe the polio. But, you know, and then, of course, as time goes by, where you get more and more vaccines, you got the MMR, and you got the HIB, and you got the pneumococcus, and then you got the hepatitis B, and you got all of these vaccines. So these kids were getting, you know, 20 or 30 shots by time before they were a couple of years of age.
Right.
At least different vaccines. Mm-hmm. The DPT would be actually three, and then the MMR would be three vaccines, and they were insulting the whole immune system with multiple vaccinations. And then there's the aluminum in there as well, the aluminum and the mercury, and that just turns on the whole immune system, not normally, but artificially, and it lasts and lasts, and of course, it affects the brain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the amount of exposure that the children have actually exceeds the EPA recommended levels for mercury exposure.
But they can't admit that to the American people, because mm-hmm. then we'd suddenly realize they'd made a mistake, and the Centers for Disease Control and the NIH and the FDA and all these organizations would never admit they made a mistake, because think of the liability, and so of course they've simply lied.
Well, here's an interesting statistic or a fact about vaccines. A single vaccine given to a 6-pound newborn, okay, a baby, a 6-pound newborn, is about the same as giving a 180-pound adult 30 vaccines in the same day. And that's just ridiculous. I mean, could you imagine an adult getting 30 vaccinations in one day and what the mercury level in that would be and how that would affect them? And yet they're giving the equivalent of that to a 6-pound newborn whose brain is still developing, who is a lot more sensitive to any kind of toxicity in the environment. And it's no wonder that children are you know, becoming aggressive and violent, and their IQs are diminishing, and autism rates are higher, ADHD, you know, all sorts of things. When you have basically a poison being injected into your babies that even a 180-pound man couldn't handle, there's something wrong there.
And yeah, not only that, but of course the water fluoridation. You fluoridate the water where you get increased levels of blood, by lead in the blood, and universally. And why that is, nobody's exactly sure, but they have a high lead level. There's no safe level of lead for children. And this creates this same anger and rage and pathological behavior as well. So our kids really got about three strikes against them. That's why one in six American children has some sort of a neurodevelopmental abnormality. But nobody in the government has any idea why it's happening.
Well, there are some people. There's Senator Burton. I think he's from Illinois. I'm not sure.
Congressman Dan Burton?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
He's aware of this, and he's trying to take steps. Pretty much everything is dictated by really a lot of money. And when the pharmaceutical companies either keep the information from us or deliberately lie or have politicians in their hip pockets, I mean, that's going to stop a lot of the education, and these pharmaceutical companies are going to be continuing to make a lot of money.
Well, I think it's such a tragic situation that we have in America today, because our children are really being mistreated. I mean, who would want to harm a child? And yet they are harming them. And now that they've actually at least cut way back on the amount of mercury in the thimerosal in the vaccines here, at least in the state of California, there is beginning to be a drop in the incidence of new cases of autism for the first time in over a decade. So, but they can't let the American people know that. That would suggest there was really a problem. We'll be right back here. Okay, well, I'm going to ask if you would you mind hanging up? I'm going to have my secretary go ahead and my producer go ahead and give you another call.
Okay.
Give you a call back. See if we can get just a little better line, okay?
Okay.
Okay, fine.
Okay.
I'm going to ask Herman if he would go ahead and put another call in there, and we'll see if we can get Robert back on the line. But we have real problems in America as far as the health. There was recent studies that were done comparing people in Great Britain, I think it was from about 45 to 60, with people here in America. These were men they were studying, and they found out that the incidence of disease in those people was twice as high in the United States. We're talking about heart disease, diabetes, really frightening statistics to see how much sicker comparable groups were. There was very little difference in smoking. Actually, the English drank a lot more in the way of beer and other products than the Americans did. Americans, adults, are a great deal more ill than people in other countries, and this is true with our children as well. You can take children from third world countries, bring them to the United States, and you'll find out that in a relatively short period of time, they begin getting obesity, they begin getting asthma, and they begin getting other neurodevelopmental abnormalities. Robert, are you there?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, well, there was one other point I wanted to bring up. You mentioned the studies done with mercury and autism, and the blood levels and the urine levels of mercury. And there's one thing about that that's pretty misleading. Even if the mercury levels did go up, I think they only went up slightly in the urine or the blood. But mercury and heavy metals like lead and mercury, cadmium, those sorts of things, they're what's called lipophilic. That means they're fat-loving, and they have an affinity towards lodging in the fat or different tissues of the body. They don't float around freely in the body, so you're really looking for them in blood and urine is really not the best place to look for them. Places you need to look for them are in tissues where they are lodged. And I know when I was the environmental engineer and the hazardous waste people, they would have to get tested every 6 months. And they wouldn't have blood drawn, and they wouldn't have urine tested. They would have hair samples done and fingernails clipped off and sent to the lab to test their heavy metal toxicities. That's how they were tested and screened to see if they were being exposed to, you know, if they were taking up a lot of the exposure, because some of the places they were in were, you know, very very dense with different things. They had to wear special clothing and what have you. So they tested them looking at tissues, not the blood and the urine. And when they do it, when they report a study like this and they're saying that blood levels didn't increase for mercury, I mean, everybody thinks, oh yeah, that proves it, but it really doesn't, because they're looking at the wrong thing. And that's another misleading thing that I'm sure they know about, and they're making it look like there's no impact on the organism, but really there is, because they're just not looking in the right place.
And of course, another thing is that well, the children who have the defect and can't excrete mercury and then tend to accumulate in the brain, the autistic children, they will not have mercury in their hair because they can't excrete it. They can't get it out of their system. So even here we're having real problems. So if that is the case, why are they looking in the blood and the urine to find out if these children are getting toxic? They know, but of course they can put together a very interesting paper and convince people, see, there's absolutely nothing to worry about.
Right.
Go ahead, have your mercury fillings. We'll be right back here in a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Robert Bernardini. His book is The Truth About Children's Health, A Comprehensive Guide to Understanding and Preventing and Reversing Disease. And so, basically, of course, you go into a great deal into cancer. You go into certainly the nutrition, what we can do as far as nutrition is concerned. Where was the best place, you think, to begin to talk about your book?
Well, there was another thing that really prompted me to write the book, and that was research done by Weston A. Price. He was a dentist, and another medical doctor, Francis Pottinger, and he was a medical doctor, and he did a lot of testing on cats because he was operating on cats in his research, and he found out some cats survived the operations okay and some didn't. And he started to wonder why, and he looked at the diet of the cats. And he noticed that certain cats would survive better on certain kinds of foods than others. And this was over a 10-year period. He worked with 900 cats, and something like 10 generations of cats were under his scrutiny. And he noticed the cats on the deficient diet, is what I'm going to call it now, and I'll tell you what that deficiency was in a minute. But he noticed the cats with the deficient diet, the first generation of those cats got sick in older life, like, you know, in their later years. The next generation of cats that were bred and raised eating that deficient diet would get sick earlier in their life cycle, middle age, so to speak. If those cats continued eating the same deficient diet, then the next generation would end up becoming sick in childhood, basically, you know, childhood for the cat. And I thought that was very interesting, because look at the pattern that we have going on with our children. You know, when I was a kid, back in the 60s and 70s or so, you know, somebody having leukemia was just about unheard of. There was no obesity around. Cancer for children was just, you know, just non-existent. Now, it's headline news. There's all sorts of organizations looking for cures. There's hospitals devoted just to children's cancer. And you have to wonder why. Why was it that years ago there wasn't so much of the problems with kids, and now there is a lot of problems with kids? And it's the same kind of scenario that played out with the cats. And cats are just organisms too, just like humans. I mean, we have living tissue, we take in nutrients, we excrete waste. I mean, it's, even though cats aren't genetically exactly or near exactly the same as humans, you know, they're still biological organisms that adhere to certain chemical, physiological, and laws of physics. So when you look at that trend with those cats, and you look at the history of what we're going through here, and how diseases now are just more and more prevalent earlier and earlier. I mean, children now are getting adult onset diabetes more and more.
And in childhood, that's the thing. There's
yes.
type 1, type 2. Type 1 was for children. Type 2 is for adults. And now we're getting children with
exactly.
type 2 diabetes.
Right. We're having teenagers that are showing signs of osteoporosis.
Right. And, of course, you know, one of the things, everybody's concerned about obesity. They know that the NutraSweet, the aspartame, that is in almost all of our prepared foods and certainly in our diet drinks, the aspartame produces pathological obesity in every animal in the world and in human beings. Have you ever noticed how fat people are always drinking diet drinks? Well, that's
yeah.
why they're fat.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't lose weight when you're taking in aspartame. They know that, but they can't let the American people know that. Wouldn't be good for business.
Well,
they might ask why the FDA is doing that. They know aspartame predisposes animals to brain tumors. There are laws against putting anything in food that produces cancer and tumors in animals, but they go ahead and do it anyway.
Mm-hmm. And aspartame actually was originally banned, and then it was reversed because of the research.
No, it wasn't banned because of research. It was banned because a man named Donald Rumsfeld, who was that in 1980 was the president of J.D. Searles, had a lot of political clout. He was on the Reagan transition team, and he put his man in the FDA, who overrode all of the scientific studies, 15 years
right.
of research, which banned it. And then, of course, he called in his chits, he got it, and he made millions of dollars out of it,
yep.
poisoning the American people. But then Donald Rumsfeld, we know, is a man of integrity. He wouldn't do anything that was dishonest, or would he?
Well, so much for the bird flu, right?
Right. Incidentally, Donald Rumsfeld is the head of the company that came up with Tamiflu. You wonder why all this information on the danger of bird flu... You know, and we're spending billions of dollars. About 100 people have died, and we're spending billions of dollars for Tamiflu. And have you ever noticed how Donald Rumsfeld's smiling all the time?
Yeah. I wonder why.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Robert Bernardini, and we're talking about his book, The Truth About Children's Health, The Comprehensive Guide to Understanding and Preventing and Reversing Disease. Well, Robert, certainly I concur with your concern about the NutraSweet and all the disease we're seeing in our children.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's becoming more and more prevalent, and it just goes to show... We do have a blueprint for this and what's going on, and that was the cat studies that I mentioned. And let me just kind of give you a quick overview of what I see as happening. The deficient diet that the cats were on was basically a cooked food diet, and the cats that were fed raw milk and different raw materials, raw meat and raw milk, basically, and I think some cod liver oil. They survived. They had kittens. They were healthy. They procreated normally. There weren't any birth defects. The cats were gentle. They were loving. They didn't get in fights. The cats that were fed the deficient diet, which was mostly cooked food, denatured food, devitalized food, deficient food, got sick younger and younger through their life cycle as their generations went on, and also developed a lot of sociological and behavioral problems too. They became aggressive, they fought constantly, there was role reversal. That means the women, the female cats became very aggressive and the male cats became docile. There was homosexuality. There were all sorts of different acts that the cats did that would be considered abnormal compared to a healthy set of animals. And when you look at our society now, I think, you know, our society is morally declining. We have a lot more aggressive behavior. Things seem to be spiraling out of control in a way. And a lot of people's point to, you know, oh, well, single family house or single parent households and different sociological things, which is probably a contributing factor, but those things actually probably stemmed from somebody getting some kind of maybe a behavioral problem or personality clashes because of, say, mercury or lead poisoning, or some kind of physiological impact that created a psychological or sociological response.
Hold that thought in just a moment, please.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Robert Bernardini. We're talking about his book, The Truth About Children's Health, and Robert was just saying that we're seeing so many children have behavioral problems and violence problems and things of this sort, and of course, students that graduate from American schools. You know, if they are, you know, put in competition, take the same test as students from other nations, we're down at the bottom of the level. Our students cannot compete scholastically on average with students from other countries. Why would that be? Well, people always want to say we're getting such a poor education, and that's part of it. But another part of it is I think that we're damaging the minds of our children. Fluoride isn't a neurotoxic substance. 67% of the water in the United States is fluoridated. Not only that, but in the fluoridated areas, there's an increased blood level in the children. And nobody knows why, but they have an increased lead level. There is no safe lead level. And, of course, that affects the brain. The same thing with the mercury. The same thing with the aluminum that is put in as an adjuvant in the shots. And once you mobilize the immune system with vaccinations, why, this doesn't simply go away in a couple of weeks. It lasts for a year, and then you're going to give them another shot and another shot, and constant low-grade inflammation of the brain. So we got a real problem, don't we, Robert?
Yes, it is a real problem, and really there's a couple major fronts here that we have to combat. One is the toxicity problem, like we're talking about here with the fluoride and the mercury and the lead. I mean, that's a very real, real problem, and we have to clean up our water supplies and our air, incinerators that are spewing out mercury into the air and lead and different things just because they're incinerating it. The mercury that's in the water and the fish that we eat, all those things are very, you know, damaging here, toxic, from a toxicological point of view, and those things affect our physiology. And when mercury gets in the system, let's say, for an example, mercury, it actually takes the place of some other, possibly vitamin C. Instead of vitamin C being in a certain chemical reaction, mercury might be, and it distorts everything. And that leads to different problems, and one of them could be a birth defect. But the problem we're having here is twofold. One of the problems is the toxicity problem with all these poisons that we have. The other problem is our food supply, which is very deficient in nutrients. Conventionally grown food and animals raised conventionally they not only have poisons in them from the hormones and the chemical pesticides and everything else, which is a real big problem too, but the soils are deficient and the plants themselves just do not have enough nutrition.
Yeah.
And people are eating things, but the amount of minerals and vitamins in that food is not enough to really allow the body to function at its optimum level.
You're absolutely right. I think that almost everybody is magnesium deficient, and that is so important as far as mm-hmm. heart function and muscle function and so many functions of the body. Well, let's go to Bill, who's calling in from Coeur d'Alene. I'm going to ask other people, though, not to be calling in because we really don't want to take any calls. We want to get Robert's ideas. But Bill, does he have a quick question?
I do appreciate it, Stan. I personally don't believe that the fish that we're eating out of the ocean are that toxic with mercury. Have you or your guest ever seen any study that really you believe is truthful that there is any significant level in the fish?
Do you know anything on that specifically, Robert?
No, I would have to go back and pull out those specific studies, but I'm sure that they have been. In fact, there's been studies, I think, in just in Lake Michigan, where women were eating fish out of Lake Michigan at a certain amount per week, and they compared the amount of birth defects that women had there versus women that were eating fish maybe just once a week or something. And I don't have the exact numbers right here on my desk, but there have been studies like that done to show that the mercury was having an impact on there as far as like how much mercury per fish and tissues and that sort of thing. I'm sure there's documented evidence about that when they study that. A lot of these companies that make like cod liver oil now or fish oil because the omega-3s that they want to get in there, those things have to be tested and screened for mercury.
I think, Bill, there probably is scientific evidence that you could go up on the internet and check it out. But, you know, I think that it's a very, very small amount. The question is, why is it dangerous for a pregnant woman to eat a fish that has a little bit of mercury in it, but it's perfectly all right for you to give her an influenza shot, which is recommended for every pregnant woman, you know, with that is going to concentrate in the brain of her child. Why would you do something? And if there's no safe level of mercury, and there really isn't, then why would you give influenza shots? Why would you be so concerned about one thing and then do something intentionally that would harm the child in utero? It just doesn't make sense, does it?
No, it's incredible to me how they can say, the government can say, don't eat as much fish because of mercury, and yet the mercury in the vaccines is safe, and there's no scientific proof that mercury causes any problems.
Does that answer your question, Bill? I think that there is certainly mercury there. I think it's a very small amount, but I don't think it's, I think that there is only a small amount in the vaccines. So there is no safe level of mercury.
Well, thank you very much.
God bless. Bye-bye. Okay, fine. Well, let's go ahead to some of the other issues that are out there that you cover in your book. What are some of the other major issues?
Well, let me just finish my thought here.
Okay,
on,
go ahead.
On the generation thing here and what's happening. Back in the World War I and World War II was really when a lot of this toxicity problem started, and that was an outgrowth of the war with nerve gas and that sort of thing. And they started using pesticides, which was an outgrowth of those war chemicals. Back in the 1940s or so. So I'm taking 1940 as really the year that a lot of this toxicity happened. You know, fluoride wasn't introduced into the water supply until the 40s. You know, there had been accumulations of lead and things through the years because of lead paint. A lot of things kind of came to a head in the 40s, toxicologically speaking. And our food supply has been degenerating really for the last 100 years because of the soils are just do not have any minerals in them anymore. So if we look at 1940 as the benchmark year to start with it, and each generation of man is about 30 years, the next generation, and I was referring to the cats, through three or four generations of cats fed on deficient diet, they basically stop being able to reproduce. So if we take three or four generations of mankind on a deficient diet and a toxic diet, not just from food but from water and air and everything else, you know, you're looking at 1970 or so is the end of the first generation, 2000 is the end of the second generation, and about 2030 is the end of the third generation. And isn't it interesting that our sperm, man's sperm counts have dwindled over the years? In fact, there's about half as much a man in an industrialized nation has his sperm count is about half as much as it was in World War II.
And I think that is a very interesting and astute observation, and that really is true. The sperm count for the average man is down, but specifically in areas with fluoridated water, they know that. They just don't want the public to know that. It's a very efficient means of fertility control. And
well,
the same thing is true with mercury. Mercury tends to suppress the reproductive capacity, as does aspartame.
Sure, and I touched on this thing with war materials. The fluoride problem got started because of the Manhattan Project in World War II, and fluoride is a big waste product of the development of nuclear weapons. And, you know, right around that time, they came out with this study saying fluoride helps with cavities. And isn't it coincidental that that's around the time that fluoride was being produced in mass quantities from the nuclear war industry, and also it's produced from fertilizer, artificial fertilizer development, and the glass industry, and a lot of other industries. So they had tons and tons of this fluoride waste to get rid of. So instead of taking it to a hazardous waste landfill, which is where it would have to go, they invented this story that fluoride helps with preventing cavities, even though too much of it causes mottled teeth, dental fluorosis, and they started dumping it in our water supply.
And I think it's so interesting that Europe refuses to do that. Great Britain refuses to do that. And they have half the incidence of heart disease we do. And if you go to Newburgh, New York, where they did the original study, and this is covered in a book we carry called The Fluoride Deception, in that city, compared with the companion city, I think it was Kingsbury or Kings. Anyway, Newburgh had twice the incidence of heart disease as the parallel city, but they said they had fewer cavities. The truth was that after 50 years, there was absolutely no difference in the cavities, but twice the incidence of heart disease. I wonder why.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's the kind of thing that happens, and they need to get rid of this waste, so they invented some clever way to do it, slowly poisoning the, you know, our population.
And, you know, the thing is that where is the outcry? I mean, when you compare the British populations to the American population, and we have twice the incidence of heart disease and almost twice the incidence of strokes and a considerable more hypertension and diabetes in comparable male populations, and they say, oh, shucks, we just have no idea. They sure know what they're doing. They just want the American people to know.
Well, here's another little twist on that, and you're saying, how come America doesn't respond to this? Why aren't we up in arms? Well, part of the reason is we're being drugged into submission. Fluoride is a major part of antidepressant medication.
You mean like Prozac and Luvox?
Like Prozac.
Right?
I mean, fluoride is a major part of the active ingredient there. And what those things tend to do, they're serotonin reuptake inhibitors.
SSRIs, right.
Right. And what they tend to do is really put you out of ambition. You don't get angry, but you also don't have any ambition. You end up being a couch potato, so to speak.
That's why the Nazis used the fluoride. It fluoridated the water in the occupied areas during the Second World War. Our government knows that. That's the reason Europe will not allow water fluoridation. They realize what a toxin it is, and we cover that in our, we have a syllabus. We have letters from all the countries there in Europe saying, why would you want to fluoridate your water when it's a poison?
And, you know, children drink a lot of soft drinks and fruit juice and everything. All of those things are made with water from fluoridated systems. Even fruit juice, when you go and see, you know, Welch's grape juice or something on the shelf, all natural and everything, it's made from concentrate. It's not made from fresh grapes. It's made from concentrate. And what they do is they basically distill it down into a concentrate, like when you go and you get one of those tubes of orange juice, and then you put them in a pitcher and you add water, right? You're reconstituting it. When they reconstitute that fruit juice, or when they make soft drinks, they're making it with fluoridated water. So our children are, you know, we're drinking not just in our water supply, but in everything else, these compounds are in there because they're made with fluoridated water. So that's another direction that it comes at you from. And then toothpaste, you know, who won't use fluoride toothpaste? If you don't, people think you're crazy, because you want to get a cavity? But there's no proof that it stops cavities at all. In fact, there's evidence to show that people that use fluoridated toothpaste have more cavities.
Well, actually, I gave up fluoridated toothpaste. I got some cavities. I went back to it because basically the way that fluoridated toothpaste works is that it is a powerful bactericidal agent, and it kills the bacteria. And certainly cavities are basically products bacterial disease. Cavities are bacterial disease.
We would have to have a debate on that.
All right, fine,
Dr. Stan.
All right.
From what I understand, it could be from different direction than that. But I'm not saying bacteria doesn't contribute to things, but the acid that it might produce would maybe wear down the enamel some. But there's other things that actually some people think that cavities are much similar to osteoporosis because it's the weakening of the underlying structure of, because of the calcium deficiencies in the teeth that allow the cavity to form.
Right. Well,
those are a couple directions that it could be coming from.
Okay. Fine. Well, there are many things out here that are so hazardous to our health. And certainly fluoride is one of them. The aspartame, the mercury that in the vaccines. What are some of the other things that really are influencing the health of our children and of our adult population as well?
Well, I think, we've touched on a lot of them already. The toxicology problem and the food deficiency problem in our foods. Those are the two major things, and if you nourish the body correctly and keep it clean, the body can function for a long, long time without any problem. I'm living proof of that. I've eaten a pretty pure diet for quite a while, and I haven't been sick in I don't even know how long, 15, 20 years or so. And people that eat junk food, people that are having these additives in the food, people that are drinking water that's contaminated, these things mount up over time. It's not just an acute reaction that you have to be afraid of. Acute reaction meaning, a short-term, intense kind of thing.
Well, now, do you think that people should be taking supplements, vitamins and minerals, things of that sort?
Well, I know that we need the vitamins and minerals for sure. The problem I see with supplements is that they too can be contaminated, and it's difficult to find ones that are processed correctly that don't have contaminants added to them. Like magnesium stearate is a contaminant that impairs digestion and assimilation, and they add it to a lot of vitamins and mineral supplements so that the machines can run smoother. It's almost like a talc powder. Where they add the ingredients, and in order for it to flow through the machines and into the capsule, they add this magnesium stearate, which really interferes with the absorption and utilization of that vitamin or mineral. So that's the problem. And there's other ingredients there, and different problems from pesticides grown on herbs. They're concentrated in a pill. So we need to be careful with what we're doing as far as supplementation.
Okay, and you certainly would want to get them from a very reputable company. We'll be back in just a moment here with Robert Bernardini, and we're talking about his book, The Truth About Children's Health. And ladies and gentlemen, our plea to you is learn and begin to take care of your own health. Well, Robert, we've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program, so you go right ahead. What thought would you like to leave with our listeners tonight?
Well, I mentioned the work of Weston A. Price. He was a dentist. While we're talking about cavities here, he was a dentist that traveled the world back in the 30s, looking at people's diets to see how they affected, people's cavities and their bone structures. And he found that cultures that had not been exposed to white man's foods, mostly sugar and white flour, that they didn't have cavities. And when they ate the normal foods that their ancestors grew up on, which were very high protein foods, high fat foods, but a lot of uncooked foods also, and I talked about that cat study, the cat studies that the cats that ate raw food did better than the cats that ate cooked food. And Weston A. Price found the same correlation with humans. And there's evidence archaeologically, anthropologically about cooking foods and when it originated in man's evolution and that sort of stuff. And, the diets that mankind had were oftentimes not cooked. and those people did a lot of did not have a lot of diseases, especially degenerative diseases like we're having now. So he found that the sugar and the white flour were, once those were introduced into a society, all of a sudden they found diseases that they never had before, cancer, tuberculosis, the cavities started coming in their teeth. The next generation that ate that sort of stuff had bone malformations and things. So we need to get to wholesome foods. We need to get to clean foods. We need to get to stopping injecting ourselves with things, stop drinking things like fluoride and chlorine, stop putting additives in food like MSG. I mean, it's a very complicated thing. All the things that we do environmentally into our foods, it's just mind-boggling. And we need to get back as far as we can and as close to nature as possible with the least amount of processing, the least amount of contamination. And really that, in my estimation, is really the only way we're gonna be able to survive. I mentioned the sperm counts. I can foresee in the next 10 or 15 years, 20 years, there's going to be a serious problem as far as fertility goes. I mean, we already see it in fertility clinics and people that can't get pregnant. And a lot of times, here's another problem, people are having more and more twins and triplets, and that's another indication of a stressed organism.
Well, of course, that's because they're taking these pills, you know, for multiple ovulations.
Well,
hey, we're out of time. God bless. Thanks very much, Robert.
Okay.
We look forward to having you back on again
sometime soon.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and I hope you enjoyed our program with Robert Bernardini. And again, his book is The Truth About Children's Health. If you'd like to know more about it, we will be making that book available to our ministry. We also carry Dr. Russell Blaylock's excellent book, Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life, and a second book he wrote for cancer patients, Natural Strategies for Cancer Patients. So the books again, Robert Bernardini's The Truth About Children's Health, Russell Blaylock's Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life, and then of course Natural Strategies for Cancer Patients. All of these are important. Now we have four tape sets on the statin drugs. Everybody's taking statin drugs. Oh, lower is better. Lower cholesterol is better. That's what they're going to tell you. Well, you better find out, is that really true? We have a book on the statins drugs. We have a four tape set on statin drugs. We have a wonderful four tape set of interviews with Dr. Russell Blaylock about health, about life-saving health secrets. We have a four tape set on ascorbic acid and ascorbate. You need to know about the advantages of vitamin C. We have four tape sets on vitamins. On vaccinations. You need to know about that. Four tape set on autism. I mean, you realize one in about every 165 children has autism today. It used to be 1 in 10,000. Now it's 1 in 165. Oh, shucks, why do you think that is? Why did it start so recently? Well, it started as we've been giving more and more vaccines. And you need to understand that here in California, now that they've taken most of the mercury out of the vaccines, the incidence of autism is beginning to drop. But they cannot tell you that because you would begin to lose confidence in the medical establishment in America if you realize that they put cancer viruses, or there was a cancer virus in the polio vaccine, and that's one reason why cancer is up so much. The great book entitled The Virus and the Vaccine. We recommend it, The Virus and the Vaccine. And then, of course, Chris Bison's wonderful book on fluoridation, the fluoride deception, tells you that in the areas where they did the original fluoride test, twice the incidence of heart disease. Ladies and gentlemen, you've got to learn the truth about what's going on. You are responsible for your health and your children's health. And unfortunately, your doctor really doesn't understand. This is not a criticism of doctors. It's simply saying that they're not being educated, and they're certainly not getting the information from their medical organizations, because many of them are subsidized or get subsidies in one way or another from the drug companies. Certainly the medical journals get subsidized from the drug companies. We go to meetings at the hospital, and they have a talk there, and they bring in a doctor, and who do you think is paying that doctor? Who's going to give us a talk on the latest treatment? Why, it's one of the drug companies. Do you think they're really interested in your health, or do you think they're interested in the price of their stock and their income? I hate to sound crass, but this is the reality where we are today. So remember our telephone number. It's 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage, radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. Please pray for America. Pray for revival, because if we don't get back to a moral society, if we don't have another great awakening, we're going to lose this country. And finally, please pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, and the views of our callers. Now, we're going to ask if you hold your calls for the time being, because we have with us on the line Bob Chapman from the International Forecaster, who keeps us up to date on what's really going on behind the scenes. Bob, thanks very much for being with us tonight.
Well, it's always a pleasure to be on your program.
Well, Bob, certainly we're living in exciting times. You know, I don't think most people really understand that the whole financial infrastructure of our society is beginning to quake and tremble. I think the only reason the stock market's being kept up is because it's being manipulated. But the price of gold has certainly suggested something seriously has gone wrong with the international monetary system. Would that be a fair statement?
Yes, it is. And I think we got a lot further to go in that direction.
Well, for our listeners, the gold was about 670, opened about 680. What did it close, about 678, somewhere there?
in that vicinity, and the access market was up $2.80.
Now, what's the access market?
Now, that's a market that operates among professionals, and it's used to affect trades after the normal trading stops on the exchanges and the COMEX and the New York Mercantile Exchange.
I've been sort of watching what's happening over in Dubai. Is that a pretty good indication of what's happening to the world price of gold?
Yes, it is. Gold closed in the access market at 682.70, which is the June month for delivery. And so it's the next month for delivery, but that delivery is about 4.5 weeks away. And so that's the month that's normally used, and that would be considered the futures market. And so it's around 682, and hopefully the market will emulate that tomorrow. You were talking about Dubai?
Yes. But basically, I'm noticing that Russia is increasing, their central bank is increasing their gold holdings. China seems to be doing the same, you know, Korea, Japan. They all seem to be increasing their gold holdings.
Yes, they are. And you can throw in South Africa
Argentina,
too. Which took large positions here over the last year or so. And the offtake of physical buying in countries such as India, which probably owns about 25% of the free gold in the world, and in the Middle East, which has become much stronger. You had the Dubai incident, and you also have the specter of possible problems with Iran. And so that has accelerated gold buying there, although heretofore among governments in the Middle East there hadn't been much buying. Most of it was personal buying. Buying in gold in the Middle East and in Asia is for it's a cultural thing, number one. It's used at weddings and holidays, and it is a source of value. And so women are the main drivers of the purchases of gold, and they usually get it in the form of bangles, which they very often wear. These are 23-24 carat bracelets. And so that offtake has been going on since gold was 252, and it just doesn't stop. And even though the price is substantially higher now.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment, Bob.
Sure.
Well, our guest is Bob Chapman. He's just saying that an awful lot of gold is being bought for jewelry there in the Indian area. And of course, the trouble is there's an awful lot of Indians. I mean, they've got a population of over a billion people. And if they're all buying gold bracelets, that's going to dissipate the gold supply fairly quickly, isn't it?
Well, they've been doing that for centuries. It's very cultural. And the income of farmers over the past several years in India has been excellent. And also, the industry has picked up there. Of course, the object of a lot of employment from outsourcing from the United States. And so they're doing very well, so they have more money than ever to spend. And so I expect that to continue. As far as the supply is concerned, I would guess that my calculations are that I think the central banks only have, at best, 5,000 tons of gold left. I think all of the rest of it's been sold or it's been leased out, and they carry that gold on their books as still being on the books, when in fact it's been lent out, and that lent out gold has in actuality been sold.
Well, do we really have gold? Certainly the Fed says that we have, you know, let's see, $11 billion of gold valued at $40 an ounce, which is ridiculous, but that's just to confuse us. Do we still have the gold, do you think?
I really don't think so. And I talk to people who are subscribers to the International Forecaster who have worked in Fort Knox, and they say there's no gold there. Now, it could be in other places. I know that there was much debate several years ago about gold being held at West Point, and of course you have large amounts of gold being held in the Federal Reserve Bank in New York, but they're held for a substantial amount of people, including countries.
Right, and they claim that they have $600 billion, but it sounded like they had about $1 trillion worth of gold there. But that was for a number of countries.
And they don't tell you who it belongs to.
No, they don't. But it belongs to the central banks of the world, I suspect.
Right. You know, and they've lent all that gold out, and they're never going to get it back because it's been sold. Now, you know, I wrote a couple of weeks ago, if not last week, and I said, well, how much are they going to want back? Well, if I'm right, and the sale and lease has been...
Hold that thought there. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Bob Chapman is saying that he thinks that the central banks have actually leased out most of the gold, and that gold has been sold, so they're not going to get it back. They'll probably be getting payment in dollars for the gold that they leased out, and of course they have to pay, I'm sure, the current price rather than the price it was when they leased it. So I'll pick up the story there, Bob.
Well, I think, you know, a conservative percentage is 25%. And if the number is 25,000 tons, so we got the figure probably would be about probably in the vicinity of probably $650 billion just at 25% of purchase. And the central banks, you know, may want more than that, but I think that is a low rung on, you know, the 33,000 tons that's all generally supposedly available. And that includes the U.S.'s gold, and we don't know what they've got, as we've just discussed. So I think there's going to come a time when there will be a call by central banks for some of their gold back. They know they're not going to get it all back. But even 25% would send the price of gold crazy.
Well, let's talk a little bit about silver, because silver went up to about 14, 1450, backed off to about 1380, where it's been staying there for a couple of weeks now. In other words, it doesn't seem to be able to get up past 14 again. What's happening in the silver markets of the world?
Well, there's a good reason for that. Number one had taken a jump from 880, and it hit 15, and as you say, it's 1380 approximately. And there was a lot of discounting on the fact that the silver ETA would eventually trade, and it did. In fact, we predicted that it would, and we also predicted that they would get their gold from...
They're getting the silver.
Get their silver from Warren Buffett.
Right.
And as it turned out, I was dead right on that. That's 130,000 ounces or 130 million, whatever the figure is.
Well, Warren Buffett says he sold his silver, so is that where it went?
Yeah, that's where it went. And that was the hook that allowed the SEC to say to the silver users, look, you know, they're sitting on all this silver, they bought it from Buffett, so we can't refuse them, and that should be enough. Well, the problem is, it isn't enough. Nobody knows how much silver is out there, but there's not much left in inventory. And this is very bullish for silver that Mr. Buffett has sold that silver to Barclays, which is the company that, Barclays Bank, which is the company that has formulated this exchange-traded fund in silver. Because what's going to happen, even though the silver doesn't leave the house, so to speak, unless it's sold because owners sell shares that they already own in the ETF. But the point is that it's going to be owned by hundreds of thousands of people. Now, If that's the case, the gold will have been widely dispersed. So that overhang, that, and it's 130 million ounces is what it is, that overhang is gone because every day people are going to buy silver.
No, this is the...
And there will be some sellers, too, along the way, but the point is that whole position will be neutralized and dispersed. And so what has affected silver recently, this last couple of weeks that you spoke of, is that the discounting of the fact that the event was going to happen. But just as important, for the fourth time, the COMEX and then the Merck both increased margins. And now the margins in silver are up around $8,000.
Now, could you explain to our listeners why that's important? You're talking about the commodity exchange. You're talking about the fact that
yes.
the commodity exchange has increased the margins to make it more difficult to speculate in commodities. Isn't that it? So the price won't go up?
That's correct. If they've taken the cost from, we'll say, from $2,000 to $8,000 to carry a contract. And so a lot of people have to sell some of their contracts to solidify because they don't have enough money to meet the margin requirement. And that hasn't been too widespread, but it's enough to put a temporary damper on things. But putting all things together here, there's a tremendous short in silver. And now the short is by the dealers. And the dealers have been short a long time. And they've been short more than the annual production of silver.
In other words, what they've done is they've sold silver that doesn't exist.
Exactly. And the CFTC, which is the Commodity Futures Traders Corporation, Trading Corporation, which is a governmental regulatory agency, has looked the other way all the time. And so the United States government is behind the shorts, which tells me that they guarantee them against their losses. And the guarantees, of course, are you and me and everybody else in the United States. And so there's this very, very, very large short position. And the same thing exists in gold, too, for other reasons. Historically, these are the largest short positions that we've ever seen in gold and silver. And incidentally, in the base metals market, which is copper, lead, zinc, aluminum, etc., they also have a tremendous short position. I think base metals are going to double from here over the next 2 to 3 years, and most people won't agree with that, but that's just playing catch-up on an inflationary basis. And silver and gold should move up. I would guess silver could be $200 an ounce, and I guess that my target is on gold is $3,500 an ounce. So we are just ending phase one in gold when we pass $850 and we pass $30 silver. So we're still in an initial phase where people can go in and buy gold and silver related assets and not worry about being too late in the market because we've only just begun.
Well, Chris,
and from here on out, the upside is going to accelerate very, very quickly because of professionals are starting to get in the market in a bigger way, and they will have set their positions by $850 or so and $30 silver. And then after that, regular investments, hedge funds will come in, other investors, and then when we get in gold somewhere above $1,700, the public will start to come in, and they'll take it to $3,500. I've been doing this for 47 years. I specialized in gold and silver stocks for 28 years. Believe me, I know what I'm talking about.
All right, fine. Well, it's going to be fascinating as we see this thing unfold, because how much of this increase in price of gold is related to the fact that the dollar seems to be dropping now?
Well, part of it, because it's not only the dollar, it's all currencies. The gold has moved up against every currency.
It has, okay.
Some more than others. And so it's going to continue to do so. What is that? It's called a flight to quality. It's a move to real money, not fiat dollars or fiat euros or fiat whatever.
Well, now, what about the impact of going to be of the opening of the Iranian Iranian exchange, where they're going to be selling their oil for euros rather than dollars?
Well, I think initially, once they start, they will start probably in a small way here in the next several weeks. And I think probably initially they'll trade oil both in dollars as well as euros. And then they'll start to evolve totally into euros after 3 or 4 months. And then the impact will begin because nations, let's say Germany as an example, won't have to hold a lot of dollars to pay for oil because they'll be paying for it in euros, which will be, means it will not be necessary for them to carry as big a dollar position as they had previously. So they would be a dollar seller and a euro buyer, because in anticipation of the purchase of oil in euros. And Russia's behind it big time, and so it's going to become reality. And of course then you have the whole plethora of the situation throughout the Middle East, and that's another subject, but at least on a short-term basis, and probably on a long-term basis, it's affecting the price of currencies, and even more so the price of gold and silver, because it's they're real money. And, you know, they haven't gone up for 25 years. They've been deliberately suppressed, just like commodity prices have, particularly base metals. And so what's going to happen, there's going to be this enormous surge, and great fortunes are going to be made. This is going to be the biggest bull market in the history of any bull market anywhere at any time. It's probably a chance of a millennium.
Well, that's it. Now, what about Russia? Are they selling the oil? Now, for our listeners out there, Russia today is the second largest oil producer in the world, and increasing its production very soon will begin to rival Saudi Arabia. Is Russia selling their oil in euros or in dollars? Do you know?
They're selling in dollars presently.
Okay.
But I believe, from what I've observed, one of the ways they're getting rid of some of their dollars is by purchasing gold. And they stay as light on dollars as they can. They've also been encouraging Russian citizens to get rid of the dollars that they have, fiscal dollars. And the reason why is that they're trying to wean them off the dollar that they've been holding versus the ruble. The ruble historically not being a strong currency, but now it is. There's $222 billion in reserves. I mean, they were almost bankrupt in 1998 when oil was 10 bucks a barrel. And they're paying off the last of their Paris Club loans this year, which is another $30 billion. And then they're debt-free.
Now we're going to be back in just a moment with Bob here, Bob Chapin, right here at Radio Liberty. Well, Bob, the stock market seems to be doing fairly well. Certainly it seems to be, maintaining itself, up one day, down the next day. Do you think this is all manipulation?
Well, there's no question that the Working Group on Financial Markets and the Federal Reserve are both in league in manipulating the markets. And it's a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week exercise. And it's not only the U.S. markets, it's markets all over the world. And their ability to continue to do so is waning. Their power to do that is waning, even though they have an endless amount of money. And I think they're realizing that what they want to accomplish by collapsing the world economy is going to have to go forward, even though they don't want to do it this time. And I'll tell you why they don't want to do it. If you go back a few weeks ago and you listen to what Zbigniew Brzezinski had to say, who formulated all the plans, which I read in the early 1980s, and along with The Clash of Civilizations by Huntington, and the other writer, whose name I can't remember, and they laid out this whole plan for the Middle East and how they were going to take the oil and access the Caspian Basin and outflank the, at that time, Soviet Union, which later became the Russia and the again and the CIS.
You're not thinking of Wolfowitz's article in that, are you?
Well, Wolfowitz, I'll get into that in a minute.
All right.
But anyway, what they did was lay out this plan. And a few weeks ago, what was said was that by Zbigniew is that these people who are in Washington, who are in power, have messed this thing so bad up so bad it's beyond comprehension. And his comment was, they have slowed down the process for world government by 5 to 10 years. Now, that's why I'm mentioning this, because the financial system is all ready to come down. The question is, can they prolong it long enough to make it dovetail with the ideas that they have for the Middle East? I don't know, and I don't think anybody does. And as far as what's being done to ameliorate their situation, these are the insiders, these are the elitists we're talking about, and there's a group within the elitists, you know, these guys over here have done a terrible job, they messed everything up, and we got to stop them. And that's why Wolfowitz is gone, and Leiden, and Libby, and Rove will be gone soon, and also now they're attacking Rumsfeld, he'll be gone soon, and Card is gone, and most of the neocons who are very formidable within the administration are either gone or they're going. And the last two are Cheney and Bush, and I think they're going to be told after this coming election, you either resign or we're going to get you impeached. We've got to get you out of there. You can't continue to make this kind of a mess out of the place. And so, with that said, that's where I think that whole thing is headed.
All right, fine. Well, we're going to be back here in just a moment with Bob Chapman. The situation in the Middle East really is a disaster for the people that want the world government. Zbigniew Brzezinski, the major architect of this whole thing, the man who brought the Ayatollah Khomeini to power in 1979. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening is Bob Chapman. And certainly we're talking about what's happening. The markets throughout the world are being manipulated. And remember, I'm not a financial advisor, but Bob has been at this for a long period of time, has a tremendous wealth of wisdom, and there is a group of people working within government and with the Federal Reserve and the Treasury and with some of the large stock exchanges that have about $100 billion at their disposal. And that is being used to manipulate the stock market to keep it up, because it all is a matter of perception. If they can make you think that things are good after all the stock market's out, fine. Everybody's going to feel good and comfortable. When the stock market goes down, why we begin to get pessimistic? Well, actually, of course, there's lots of reason to be pessimistic, as our factories are leaving this country. Many of our major pension funds set aside for the employees are simply imploding. There's not enough money there. Most of the people who think they're going to get pensions from their life of employment are in for a big surprise or for only a small amount of the money that they think that they're going to get. So pick up the story there, Bob, as you appraise the economic situation of our country.
Well, to tail end on what you were talking about, the pension bomb, I think they'll end up at 30 cents on the dollar. And eventually, I think the purchasing power, if we have hyperinflation, which I think we're going to, in Social Security will diminuate in a big way. I wrote an article several weeks ago, and I forget what the number was, but I think the average Social Security check really should be, this is average now, about $1,700 a month. And the average, I think, is around $850, and the high payout would be somewhere about $2,500 to $3,000 a month. That's how much the people have got shortchanged by the federal government in the actual payout they should get. And how they do that is that they use substitution, or what they call hedonics, in compilating, and they keep on changing the compilations, in the CPI.
And basically what you're saying is that supposedly the Social Security checks are to be tied to inflation. When there's high inflation, why there's more money every month for the people, but they simply lie. And they say the inflation's only 2 or 3%. And, oh, and are you going to believe them, or are you going to believe your lying eyes? And as a result, why, of course, they're not paying out anywhere near as much as they should be. Is that, would that be a fair statement?
By a long shot. It's about double and or more. And it's really dreadful what they've done to the people. But
of course, they don't have the money. If they were paying out that full sum of money they should be paying out, they'd run out of money much sooner than they're going to.
Well, it's a failed system from the very beginning. And the reason why is that the money, as soon as it started coming in June of 1935, the federal government started taking it. And so any excess that they didn't have to pay out went into the general fund, and it's been that way ever since. So Social Security, except for current income, is essentially broke. And the money that has been in excess every year went into that general fund to offset deficit spending for all federal governments since 1935.
And that's, of course, how they
finance. So it was never actuarially sound. The whole thing was it dreamed up by the village idiot.
And basically that's how they funded the Vietnam War. That's how they're funding the war today. And they tell us that the deficit this year is going to be about $331 billion. And frankly, it's going to be about twice that, isn't it?
It'll be close to $600, probably about $520, $550, including the money that is being looted from Social Security and Medicare. And if you put the two of them in, you're close to $600. And it goes on every year, and all of a sudden, we're gonna have hyperinflation, we're gonna have a depression, and 80% of people's wealth is gonna get wiped out, with the exception of people in gold and silver. And we're gonna have a situation in America where 5% of the people are going to have most of the wealth.
Well, so like it is in Mexico, then. The Mexicans don't feel real comfortable here, because that's the way it is in Mexico. You got a few billionaires, and then a few rich people, and then everybody else impoverished.
Well, the wealth in Mexico is limited. It limits to about 15% of the people, and that's just the way it's been ever since the conquistadores arrived.
And, of course, that looks like that's the way we're going here in America, because most Americans really don't believe what you're saying and what I'm saying. And then they're making preparations to protect themselves as we move into, this hyperinflational period.
Well, they're going to find out real fast, because it is going to happen.
All right,
it's
fine.
It's not going to go away, and there's no way back.
All right, we're going to be back here in just a moment or two with Bob Chapman. Do you want to take callers, or should we just simply go ahead and talk about what's going on?
Well, we'll take calls, I should think. If you want, I'll give out the phone number so they can get a...
Okay, as soon as we get back and we have more,
sure.
Everybody on board. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Bob Chapman. And as soon as all of our stations are back with us, Bob, why, we'll go ahead and get the number out and ask for calls. But, you know, as you're looking at seeing what's happened, certainly, we're told that, we just got this great employment here, that inflation is under control. Do we really have, only 4.8 or 4.9% unemployment? Do we really have an inflation rate of maybe 3%?
Well, here we go. Let me read this to you. Can you hear me all right?
I sure can.
I just wrote this morning. Here we go again, month after month. Though the April non-farm jobs, 138,000 were created, are fewer than expected, the Bureau of Labor Statistics business birth death model created out of thin air 271,000 phantom jobs for the month. Thus, the economy actually lost 133,000 jobs. The 271,000 phantom jobs are 66,000 more jobs than the model created in April of 05, and that was a year ago, so it would be year to year. And the reason that's cited is that they do the same thing each month of the year, supposedly.
I mean, figures
change those rules too. But last year, 228,000 non-farm jobs were created in April without Easter. And retail this time lost 36,000 jobs when retail sales jumped 6.5%. So it shows you how distorted the thing is. And I get these are government figures. Incidentally, wages increased 0.5%, the highest rate in 5 years during the month of April. And that is a real red flag because we have not had any wage inflation for years. I'm going back 6-7 years. And so if this continues over the next couple of months, we will be in a trend of higher wages, higher wage inflation, to add to the inflation that we're already getting from other sources.
All right. Well, what impact is the illegal immigrant having on our wage levels here in America?
Oh, it's tremendous. Example in meatpacking. Meatpackers, 10 years ago, were getting paid $19 an hour. They now get paid $9. It's just a very, very good example. And what they're doing is they're ripping the bottom out of the job structure.
All right. Hold that thought. Hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment with Bob Chapin. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Bob Chapman from the International Forecaster. And Bob, why don't you get out your telephone number, how people can get in touch with you, and get a copy of the International Forecaster.
Yes. We publish the Forecaster every Saturday by email. And we also have a hard copy that goes out twice a month. So you can get a copy either in hard copy or by email, whichever you choose. And email is, of course, the best and quickest way. And you can get that free complimentary copy by simply calling 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. And, of course, that's a toll-free number. And you'll get a free copy. And if you like it, perhaps you'll subscribe. There's a lot of reading in there. Quite frankly, because of the work that we do here, you don't have to read or look at anything all week long. You just read the forecaster at the end of the week, the email version, and we don't miss anything all over the world.
And I really, you do an excellent job. I always look forward to it, but it doesn't arrive for one reason or another. I always feel very deprived. In fact, I always call you or email you to make sure I get mine. So let me recommend the International Forecaster. Fascinating overview of what's going on and puts you really on the cutting edge of what's taking place. Now, if you're out in the listening audience and you'd like to talk to Bob, if you have a question, give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And let me simply comment that our country is in very real financial problems. I mean, basically, we are the largest debtor nation in the world. I mean, we are having to borrow close to $3 billion every single week just to pay our debts. And what happens if we can't borrow money from other countries? Well, we're just going to have to monetize the debt, and that is highly inflationary. And, of course, as time goes by, and especially if we do get involved with an altercation in a nuclear strike on Iran, which apparently everything suggests that the Bush administration is intent upon it, even though it is totally insanity, why there would be tremendous repercussions here in America as far as destabilizing our society. So let's go to Roger, who's calling from Allentown. Roger, do you have a question for our guest?
Yes, thank you, gentlemen. And Bob, I'd like to ask if you would be able to corroborate, and I had just caught the edge of it, but I'm guessing someone from the District of Criminals or thereabouts having stated that confiscation of gold is no longer off the table, and if so, would you regard that as present more of a psychological ploy to dissuade the foolhardy from acquiring it, preserving their wealth? And if further, what would you see? Would there be even that anywhere near the stupidity level in complying with such a confiscation.
Okay, fine. What are your thoughts on that, Bob?
First of all, governments can do anything they want. So the government can confiscate your gold, your guns, your children, your house, and under the Patriot Act, it makes it even easier. So, and they've been able to do that for a long, long time, particularly in gold. And yes, they can, and that's why I tell people, you take delivery and you hide it. And it's as simple as that. And hopefully you can take delivery without having any records so they won't know you have it. And, I mean, you know, this has been going on for millenniums. And, we still have people who are building a building in Rome or renovating it, and they dig down and they find a pot of gold because somebody in the year 432 thought things were going to get tough, so they buried some gold, and they went and died or got killed or whatever, and nobody dug it up until last week. And so this has been going on for centuries. We've had the perennial problems with governments over and over and over again. But that shouldn't deter people from buying gold and silver. They should definitely do it, but they should take delivery.
All right, fine. Well, let's go to Dale, who's calling from Santa Cruz, who has a question about deficit inflation. Again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Dale, do you have a question for our guest?
Yeah, I would just like to quickly get it straight in my mind and understanding the events that occurred during the Depression in the late 20s, 30s, and that event was referred to as deficit inflation, or what is it?
You're talking about in the late 30s, or you're talking about the late 1920s, 1929?
Well, the Depression that occurred. I mean, I'm too young to really to know much about that time, or I haven't investigated.
All right, fine.
I'll explain to you what happened. In September the 28th, 1929, the stock market began its crash. And it went down, and then in 1932, there was a big rally in the stock market. And it turned around and went down again. And there was a slight rally again in 35, and then it started down again. And 35 was a very auspicious year because I was born. But anyway, we never came out of the Depression. We went into war. And that's what rejuvenated the world economy. And unfortunately, that was a difficult way to do it, but the people in charge, that's what they did deliberately. And incidentally, during that time, gold shares made out quite handsomely. Example, Homestake went from $6 to $665 a share during that six-year time period.
Wow.
And what happened during Depression was that when things collapsed, values collapsed. The key that caused the collapse was interest-only loans, what we called adjustable-rate mortgages today, and 90% margin in the stock market. But you got to remember that probably 25-30% of the people were in the stock market. So it wasn't that big a factor. And so when the housing market went down and the stock market went down simultaneously, it left the economy on its back. And what happened next was that the Federal Reserve cut back in the issuance of money and credit, which even magnified the problem, sending us very, very deep into depression. And, you know, most of the banks in the country failed. And so that's how that whole scene played out. So there was never really a hyperinflationary boom in America preceding or into the Depression. There have been in other places, but not in the U.S. at that time. And I compare what's going on today with that period in time because some of the same problems exist. But more importantly, the main thing about today is, percentage-wise, we have hundreds of percent more debt. There was very little debt during those days. Today, the debt is incredible. And so
right.
The system's going to take a far harder whack this time than it did last time.
So, is there a particular name for this perceived rush back of dollars to this country in an inflationary sense, or how would you perceive relating that as a in terminology?
Well, first of all, the Federal Reserve has the ability to create money and credit, and they do that every single day. And those dollars go all over the world, and usually they'll end up in another country because we have a trade deficit. We buy more things than we sell. In fact, we don't make many things anymore. And at the end of this year, it should be 7% of GDP, and no economy has ever experienced that. And that would be close to $900 billion more that we're spending than what's coming in. So that money's going out to other nations. And the other nations either have to hold it or get rid of it,
right,
the dollars that they have. And this last week, G7 had a meeting, and they have touched with their magic wand the IMF that couldn't solve anything at any time, anywhere. And the IMF is going to supposedly save us by reallocating assets in a blameless manner. And what they're trying to do is get the heavy dollar holders like Japan, China, England, etc., to hold their positions while the U.S. continues to do what it profligately is doing. And that's not going to work. So what they're doing is they're buying time here. It's really as simple as that. And and I don't expect that situation is going to get better. It's just going to get worse.
Well, it's clear to me after watching the currency exchanges with Russia, they're heading towards the exit as quietly as possible, but they're making the moves. Thank you very much, sir. God bless.
All right, thanks very much, Dale. And our telephone number again is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295 if you have a question for Bob Chapman of the International Forecaster, and fascinating information about what's really going on in the world today. So basically, the stock market is up one day, down one day, the next day. And of course, it's hanging in, what, about 11,200, somewhere there?
Yeah, it's trying to approach its old high, and it probably will do so. But I think it's not going to go an awful lot further, at least at this time. It all depends on what transpires as far as money and credit is concerned. As you know, and perhaps some of the listeners do, the Federal Reserve terminated M3, which is a combination of money and credit. It's the broadest-based yardstick in that particular area of finance. And the reason they did that is that they don't want people to know, particularly professionals, how much money and credit that's creating.
But the M2 is really going up at a phenomenal rate, isn't it?
No, M2 is up around 5.5%. And incidentally, those figures are in the International Forecaster every week. But you got to look at the credit. Like last week, and for almost every week over the past 9 months, bank credit is up $30 billion a week. And then you have all kinds of other credits, such as commercial and industrial loans, real estate loans, securities loans.
Now, what is the rate that's going up? There was one of the figures there you have.
Oh, the phenomenal. Funny. They all together, they're averaging about 14% increase.
All right, fine.
On an annualized basis. And the currency increase is averaging around 9.5%. So you put the two of them together, you're looking at somewhere around 12%.
And so that's a real, that would be sort of comparable to what the M3 is doing then.
Yes.
Okay, fine. So
yes.
The
problem with that is that every time they increase the amount of money and credit, it's decreasing the value of the dollar. And that's why, one of the main reasons why, that gold is going up against not only the dollar, but every other currency. Because all the major nations are doing the same thing.
All right, fine. Well, let's see. We have a gentleman calling us from Montana. Hi, how are you doing?
Yeah, this is A.E. talking.
Hey, A.E., do you have a question or comment for us?
I got a comment for Bob. He's the guy that's responsible for me investing years ago in gold when it was like 320. And, of course, I've made a little bit of money now. And I lost my wife here about a month ago, so I give all my gold and silver to my son. And the reason is there's a Bible verse. I believe in the Bible, and I know, Stan, you do, because I really respect you for your witness for the Bible and for Christianity and all that. But what are we going to do with this Bible verse in Ezekiel 7:19? I asked Melody about this one time when I talked to her, and she said, well, that just means you can't buy your way to heaven. And what it says, I'll just do this real quick here. The verse before, it says, the people shall also gird themselves with sackcloth, and horror shall cover them, and shame shall be upon all faces, and baldness upon all their heads. Here's the verse that makes me always wonder if I made a mistake or not. It says, they shall cast their silver into the streets, and their gold shall be despised. Their silver and their gold shall not be able to deliver them in the day of the wrath of the Lord. They shall not satisfy their souls, neither fill their bellies, because this is their torment on account of their iniquity.
All right, fine. But what is Zechariah writing about? What time is he specific? He's prophesying something was going to happen at that time, wasn't he?
It's Ezekiel, this book that I'm reading it from here. It's about the calamity upon calamity at the end time.
Now, is that Ezekiel 38 and 39?
No, it's Ezekiel 7:19.
Okay.
You can look that up. I can never find a gold and silver dealer that can tell me what to do with that verse. And I want to believe that this Bible is the owner's manual for living our lives, because I believe that Jesus Christ is God and his Father in heaven, and not this Masonic Rosicrucian and all this Luciferian worship and all that stuff that's out there everywhere.
All right, well, then let's get Bob's response. How would you respond to A.E., who says he's been buying gold and silver, he's made a lot of money at it, and now he's just giving it all away because he feels that the Bible verse, do you think that is, don't you think it would be better to, although he's eventually going to have to put his faith in the Lord, don't you think that the Lord wants us to make preparations to protect ourselves in these days? And at least temporarily we may be able to manage. We don't know what's going to happen, but isn't it sort of a foolish, not like you know, not having fire insurance on your house or health insurance? But how would you respond, Bob?
Well, we're talking about something that was written a long time ago, and we're talking about something that fit for the times, although I will say that many of the things are appropriate in the Bible for today. There's two ways to look at it. You can do what the gentleman did and have accumulated it and decide that's not for me, and you can give it away, and there's certainly nothing wrong with that. On the other hand, you can hold it, and when all is asunder, I would assume that they will be the only thing that they can base a new monetary system upon. And you can be a contributor to that system at that time, and then help other people by, helping to create a new system, and by giving what you have, if you choose to that system. And so, it's a hard question to answer, because, yes, God is the final arbiter, but do we know really exactly all the time what to do in between?
And Chris,
it's a hard choice.
And remember, those times could come 30 or 40 years from now, and what would happen in the meantime. So, I don't know. You're going to have to make the decision on your own. But how would you feel if the terrible times come 30 years from now?
Well, I think it's just down the road.
I don't think
you guys know what you're talking about.
Anything.
I think we're going to turn into a 666.
We're talking over one another. A.E., thank you so very much for calling. And Bob, you hang on here. And we're going to be back in just a moment. And I think that each of us has to make our own decision. But I think we have a responsibility to look after ourselves and to realize that in the final analysis, why our security is in the Lord. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and sort of like the fellow I knew that would never get around to fixing the gate because he'd on his farm, because he'd say, well, the Lord's coming soon, so I'm not going to bother to waste my time fixing that gate. And, of course, what happened was all the animals got out of the out of the farmyard. But anyway, Bob, go ahead. You've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
I think that you summarized it perfectly. It's an individual choice, and it's not something to be argued either way. You do what you want to do that fits what you want to do.
Amen to that. All right, fine. Well, you anticipate, when do you think that the silver will begin making a move again? Or do you think it'll sit there for where it is for a time?
Well, I don't think it's going to sit there too long with this short position. And nothing in the world, unfortunately, is getting any better. The world financial system continues to go down, and we continue to have probable problems throughout the world. We've been told that our government wants to attack Iran. Our government really doesn't want to pull out of Iraq. There's all sorts of negative things going on out there.
Some people say that this is just an effort to scare the Iranians into doing what we want, but we're really not serious because it would be insanity to attack Iran. How would you respond to those?
Well, I agree completely. They're trying to stop the gas pipeline going from Iran to Pakistan and India. They want a freeway to go from the Caspian. The shortest route is through Iran. They want that for themselves because they want to take oil and gas out of there and run it down into Israel and have it shipped, you know, to the United States. And they also want to geopolitically outflank Russia. But I think the time has passed. I think that they've made some terrible mistakes in doing what they're doing from their point of view. And from our point of view, it's been a disaster. And I don't think it's going to get better. And I don't think at this time, from what I can see, that they're going to go after Iran. I just think it'll simmer for the next several months. But there's all kinds of other nasty things going on out there that could make things very difficult for us in this world.
Well, I certainly hope and pray that you're right, that we're not going to go to war with Iran, because, you know, it would be total insanity. But then, of course, we live in a world sometimes, I think, it's gone mad. There are only a few of us sane, and everybody thinks we're crazy. Bob Chapman, once again, that telephone number where people can get your information?
800-375-4188. 800-375-4188.
God bless you, Bob. Thank you so much for being with us. We'll look forward to having you back on with us a little later this month, once again here at Radio Liberty.
Thank
bye-bye.
You. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when I need to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we first put the programs on trying to keep you abreast of what's going on. We try to bring you commentators from all different parts of the political spectrum with all different ideas, and you're going to have to decide what you think is right. But I will tell you that I think we're entering into very, very difficult times, not only from the purely monetary point of view, but from the spiritual point of view, because I feel that America has turned against God, and there's no incidence in all history where a nation has turned against God where God is not withdrawn his blessing from that nation. So with that as an understanding and that remembrance of what Thomas Jefferson had said about, I've trembled for my country when I reflect that God is just and his justice will not sleep forever. Watch what's going on. Well, this is the time I need to remind our listeners. Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and we do hope that many of you out there will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters, because we need your help to keep doing what we're doing. And if you agree with us, why, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. If you would like to get a free copy of one of our newsletters, again, that same number, 1-800-544-8927. You can listen to our programs 5 hours a day on the Internet. at RadioLiberty.com, either directly or to the American Freedom Network, AmericanNewsNet.com. That's AmericanNewsNet.com at 7 o'clock in the morning Pacific time. On GCNLive.com, that's GCNLive.com, from 3 to 4 Pacific time every day. And then from 4 to 5 at Radio Liberty, and then from 8 to 10 at Radio Liberty. That's Pacific time, and we're also on the Republic Broadcasting System, and we're on the American Christian Network and the Christian Broadcasting System and the Here's Help Network, and we have an opportunity to reach people all across the country, but quite frankly, we need your help. And if you agree with me that we're involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization, give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family. Our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. Certainly, if you haven't read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you need to get it and read it. If you have not yet seen our video, A World Revolution, we think it's an excellent overview of what's going on. And then, of course, my talk on planned population reduction. My talk on the coming financial crisis. We have an excellent syllabus. It's called The Financial Tsunami. And, of course, there is a talk that goes with that. We hope that'll be available in DVD form in the very near future, within the next week or so. That's The Financial Tsunami. And then, of course, we ask you to tell others about our program and encourage them to listen. Because if people don't understand that nothing as it appears to be, there really are secret societies, and behind those secret societies are dark and sinister spiritual forces. And then please pray for America, pray for revival, pray for our leaders and our ministers, but please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision, our protection, because we're on the front lines of this battle. And so until tomorrow at the same time, when we'll be with you once again, Dr. Stan, goodbye, and may the Lord be with you.